I know my wife could beat you up. I mean, me up. All right. Well, should we get this show on the road then?
Do you hate wasting hours debugging code every week when you should be working on your app? You should check out our new sponsor, Airbrake.io, a full-stack error monitoring tool that alerts you to errors in your software, then helps you diagnose and fix them. That means no more wasted time searching log files and more time writing and shipping great code. Airbrake supports .NET and all major programming languages. Get set up at getairbrake.com/CB for a free 30-day trial and the chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card at the end of the month. It's a completely free trial and you'll be shocked by how much time it saves you. Again, that's airbrake.com/CB. Again, that's getairbrake.com/CB.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another Ruby Rogues podcast. This week on our panel, we have Dave Kimura.
Hey, everybody.
Eric Berry.
Hi there.
I'm Charles Max Wood from devchat.tv, and this week we have a special guest and upcoming Ruby Dev Summit speaker, Kinsey Ann Durham. Kinsey, you want to say hi?
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You've been on the show before, but do you want to just remind people who you are, what you do?
Yeah, I was on the show. Wow, was that like 3 years ago? Well, maybe four. Talking about different ways or to get into software engineering. And yeah, I am still writing code every day, all day for a company called Go Spot Check. I am also a lead mentor for a program in San Francisco called Block, and really enjoying living in Denver.
So, and you're a fly fishing aficionado.
Yes, and I love fly fishing in my free time when I'm not writing code.
That's so cool.
So you've been with the same company, what, for 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, for, I guess it'll almost be 3 years. Yeah, for a while.
So Dave, you're not a unicorn.
Yeah, I just celebrated my 8th anniversary with my current employer.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, I'm a creature of habit, I guess.
Congratulations. I know that's pretty rare in a startup. I don't know if you work for a startup, but
no, I work for Sage Software. It's a 13 to 15,000 employee company.
Oh wow!
So it's definitely one of those giants. So, yeah. But awesome. It's been fun.
That's awesome.
Well, our topic for today is queuing and Amazon SQS, and you're going to be doing a little bit more kind of hands-on demo at the conference. But I thought it'd be interesting to just kind of get some background on this and, you know, see what it's all about and what people are using it for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely had done some research as to what people were using it for and kind of the best applications of it. But we've been using it on a smaller scale, and I've really enjoyed it, and it's super easy to use. And, you know, moving away from APIs or, you know, like a Heroku scheduled worker that runs every 10 minutes, it's been great. So definitely recommend moving towards using something like Amazon SQS. Another one, I don't know if you guys have heard of RabbitMQ, but that's another option. I haven't used that. I don't know if you guys have.
I have.
Yeah, it's a great tool.
Cool.
Well, and queuing isn't a new way of doing things by any means in Ruby or Rails. I mean, we have Rescue and Sidekick and a bunch of other tools that allow us to, you know, some of them are more basic than others. But yeah, some of them are just, you put a job in, you pull a job off, and then others have, you know, scheduling and named queues and all kinds of other features to them.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So for us, it's a new thing, I guess, in our current like architecture and moving more towards services rather than, you know, we have the stereotypical, huge monolithic Rails app. And as our team grows, and like I said, I've been with this company for a while, so it's been really awesome to be a part of the scaling aspect of it and going from a small Rails app with, you know, a few customers to, you know, multiple apps and different services and a ton of customers and a ton of different use cases. So getting to explore different architecture patterns and different tools like Amazon SQS has been a great learning experience.
Hey, Kinsey, can you talk a little bit about your company and the challenges that led up to using that software?
Yeah, so Go Spot Check, we're a startup out here in Denver, and I started when we were pretty small in a tiny co-working space. We had, maybe six customers at the time. Now I think we have like hundreds now, and we build reporting. We do a lot of reporting for and data collection for big companies that, you know, are interested, that have field teams who need to know what's happening in stores, and they never got any of that data back. Before, they were doing it on Excel spreadsheets and had these big computers or pieces of paper that they were taking into these stores. And
when you say stores, you mean like retail stores?
Retail or, yeah, grocery stores or even bars, you know, all across the board. So working with both alcohol beverage brands as well as retail brands. So we do a lot of data collection with them and analyze that data because they didn't have any insight into that before, is mainly what we do. We have different use cases and applications for the software, but that's primarily our focus. And it's been super exciting because we're starting to move more into the computer vision aspect of it and being able to have a machine recognize different brands or different things in the photos. So that's currently the team that I'm working on right now. And we have a service. So we're a separate service off of like the main application and the main thing of what Ghost Spot Check does. So for us, it's been very interesting to use these cues since we have multiple services and multiple apps that we're working in, and just trying to figure out the best tool to be able to communicate. You know, do we use API endpoints or do we use something like message cues to communicate between these different services?
So is your stack built on Ruby then, or what does your stack look like?
Yeah, so I am currently working in Ruby. We also have, we're using pretty much just a Rails API only. I don't know, in Rails 5, you have the API only mode, which has been cool. So using that mostly is what I'm working in. And then all of our computer vision stuff is, you know, done in Python or MATLAB, something like that.
So are you using, is it Shoryuken for connecting to the SQS?
No, I haven't even heard of that.
It's actually a fantastic
You say
gem.
That in my, what is it? Street Fighter 2 days when I was a kid.
Shoryuken!
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I know where that came from. Yeah.
Shoryuken! With the fireball coming out.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
That's awesome. Here.
Yeah. It's like the best name gem in the world. So what it is, it's a lot like Sidekick, right? But what it does is it allows your Rails app to plug directly into an SQS queue and either add to it or consume from it. I'm using it quite extensively. I love SQS. Cool. And so, but it really makes it very easy for your Rails application to slurp in the queue data.
Oh, that's cool. No, we just have basically an object that connects to it, you know, and either pops messages off the queue or deletes them or puts post messages to a queue, that sort of thing. We're not using the Shoryuken. I haven't even heard of this, but this is awesome. I'm totally going to look at this.
I'll make a note in the chat. So
I'm kind of wondering, you know, as you're working with the computer vision then, and things like that, are you just feeding the images through then as part of, you know, through the queue? Or does that get sent over a different way? Or, yeah, how exactly does the queuing fit in with all of this stuff talking
about? What we're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically we started using the queue or Amazon SQS because we wanted to have a more decoupled way of developing. Mm-hmm. So instead of having an API endpoints where you have to make sure like we're releasing both at the same time and that sort of thing, this allowed us to just have a conversation about what we wanted the message to look like really decide the contract between the two services and have that important conversation up front and decide on that. And then we were able to, you know, develop on our own. And, you know, it's with Amazon SQS, it's so easy to create fake messages and, that sort of thing for testing. So I really liked that aspect of it. You know, you can create it through the command line or through the UI. And basically what we're doing is just sending different image data back and forth with the queue. So we do a lot of like planograms. I don't know if you guys know what planograms are, but basically these companies have these planograms of what they want, like their display setup to look like in a store, for example. And we'll take that information and that data or of the coordinates that we have boxed these images with and post that information onto a queue from the like machine learning side of things. And then on the Rails side of things, I can pick that up in the API and actually send that back to the main app. So stuff like that is what we're mainly using it for. And I know that sending images is a really big use case for Amazon SQS. I'm not sure how you guys are using it or what you've used it for, but.
So I use it for, it's really simple to pump in data directly through through Amazon API. So I have an app that uses the Amazon MWS API, and it's really simple to tie in with that. But I haven't done any images. I didn't realize you could do images through that. So does it accept binary data in the queue then? Is that how that works?
We're not sending actual images. It's all of the comparison data from the machine learning aspect side of things. So all of the data that we've that we have processed on the machine learning side of things. So, but I did read an article where people were sending images when I was doing some research, but I didn't dig into it and try on my own.
It also seems like it might just be more efficient to upload your images to S3 and then just put a handle into the queue.
Right.
Depending on how you have to manage queue size and speed and things like that.
Do you use SQS in parallel with SNS, the symbol notification service?
You know, we haven't found a need to use SNS, but I definitely think that would be really interesting to. I don't know if you guys have used it or have had a good use case for that.
I have used it, and I'm trying to. I'm not prepared on this one, but yeah, it does work together. You can actually have them talk to each other, and it's been very nice. I'll have to come back with the what I'm using it for, but yeah, I wrote that a while ago.
Awesome. Yeah. No, basically, we're just using it to post messages on it and then pop messages off of it. To communicate between different services instead of using an API endpoint or, you know, a scheduled job that goes and checks something, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So you mentioned. Point,
sorry. I'm sorry. I talk way too much. I'll shut up.
At what point would you need to consider something like SQS over like a Redis cache or Sidekick?
Yeah. For me, I didn't look into using Sidekick or anything like that off the bat. I was excited to try Amazon SQS. I know that's a terrible answer, like, ooh, it's a new shiny toy. But it was just so
simple. I like
simple. Shiny
things.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so I really wanted to try it out, to be honest, and just see how simple it was, if it was easy to use, and I found that it was. So instantly I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to use this tool. And I, for some reason, was expecting it to be harder than it was. And after reading the documentation for like 10 minutes, you can be, you know, posting messages to the queue and getting messages off of it. So
is it pretty comparable then to Rescue or Sidekick?
Yeah, I would say so.
It's a hosted service instead of, you know, setting up a queue and starting and stopping it through Rake or something.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, that was a lot easier to not have to think about those things. And, you know, really Amazon handles a lot of things for you, like message visibility, timeout. So, you know, you can't have another service come in and take the same message and that sort of thing. So and you get all that stuff for free, kind of just right out of the gate. And you can obviously customize how long that you want that visibility timeout to be. You can use two different queues too. So if you care about message ordering and making sure there are no duplicates, you can use their FIFO or FIFO, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, first in, first out queue versus their standard queues. But their standard queues, you know, you can have unlimited messages, really, which is really nice. Whereas with the FIFO queue, they kind of limit that, like the transactions per second.
That makes sense. Yeah. And a lot of the ordering and, you know, management across queues and things like that, that's stuff that I see a lot more toward the RabbitMQ end of things, as opposed to Redis Rescue. I keep saying Redis, Rescue and Sidekick, you know, which are usually much more simplified queues. You can set up scheduling on them, but I think that's as complicated as I've ever gotten on them.
Right. Yeah. And I haven't done complicated stuff like that with Sidekick. So yeah. And I just liked with Amazon, you just get all that stuff for free kind of right out of the gate and don't have to worry a lot about configuration at all. Especially if you're just using it for something pretty basic.
Yeah. So people are pretty familiar, I think, with the pattern. You know, you put a message on the queue and then, you know, you're not blocking on IO or anything else as you wait to get a response or things like that. You know, your Rails app can just return, or Sinatra or whatever else you're using, you know, that's putting data onto the queue. And so it decouples all that from the back end processing that has to happen, but you don't necessarily have to make your user wait for. But usually what happens is on the other end, there's a worker. And so, you know, with Sidekick and Redis or Rescue, I swear. Anyway, with I'll just say Sidekick from now on. Anyway, with Sidekick, you usually have to write some kind of worker on the other end. And, you know, some people talk about these as like microservices, or I've actually heard the term nanoservices, which I think is silly. But anyway, so how do the workers come together? Yeah, because they're tiny, tiny. Anyway,
nanoservices.
Yeah. So how do you wind up writing the workers for an SQS queue?
Yeah. So like I said, like what gets the messages off the queue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
so
it does whatever it does.
Yep. So I have a plain old Ruby object that I have in the API that is that I can reuse across different queues. So we don't have one queue. We have multiple queues. Mm-hmm. We have three queues. So I wrote something that could be used, you know, with any queue, wasn't coupled, just, you know, takes a queue URL so it knows which one to go look for. And yeah, it just has the basic things that you do, like, you know, popping the message off, deleting it. So I built an interface around that so it could be reused, and then just use that in a processor or response process worker, that sort of thing, that just uses that plain old Ruby object and gets those messages and parses whatever it needs from it. Is that what you were asking me? Mm-hmm. I feel like I didn't answer the question very well.
I'm also curious. One thing that I've seen is that some people like to put these workers in like a separate repository or a separate library and then have to share functionality between the two. And some people like to have it as part of their overall Rails repo, and then they can just pull in the stuff and kind of auto load it the way that Rails does. What approach have you taken with?
Interesting. Definitely don't have a separate repository. It all lives in one repository, but I feel like that would be awesome to play with and experiment with. Is that how you guys are doing it?
That's usually how I do it. It's easier that way.
Why do you say it's easier? Is it just because of hosting?
No, it's mostly just because you can pull in this. You basically auto load your Rails environment, and then you know, you get all of your models and everything else for free, as opposed to putting it in a separate.
Separate. Okay, I thought you say you were doing it in the.
Yeah,
separate
I one. Thought no. You were saying doing it a separate one too.
Nope.
You are a trailblazer, Chuck. Trailblazer.
The right closest there. Thing I've come to doing things in a separate repository is using something like Amazon Lambdas or things like that, where.
Yeah.
You know, essentially you just want something that's really, really tiny and really focused. The ideas there are much simpler. I don't need to pull in a full class that specifies an object to do whatever, whatever. You know, I'm just telling it, look, you have this little job and it has to do one little thing. And yeah, and then it just does it.
Here's how I have it. It's kind of a fun tool I have set up. I have a Rails app that communicates. It hits 10 little Lambda services that are running, and those Lambda services I think are hosted on Zeit now. It hits those and it fires off a job that basically runs a scraper. The scraper then sends the data, after it parses the data, to Amazon SQS, and then the Rails app slurps the data back in from SQS. So it's making a full circle of data there. And it works really, really well.
That's awesome.
Good stuff.
So are there any other uses for queues or SQS beyond I have a message? You have a message, answer the message. You know, are there other things that people have done with this kind of a setup that is a little bit I don't know, different from just getting that decoupling and that asynchronous nature of processing data or other things?
I'm sure there are. I haven't come across any personally in the stuff that I'm working on right now, but I'm sure that there is. Have you guys done anything a little different with it?
So I'll be honest, I haven't used SQS yet. It's kind of been on my back plate of things to get in there and try out, but you know, I really haven't found a genuine need for it yet, or at least nothing I've done has scaled up to the point where I would want to offload the messaging queue. You know, my environments typically look like, you know, I have a load balancer coming in with several web servers, and behind the scenes, I have a tier of Sidekick servers that are handling, you know, the background processing jobs and communicating out to a Redis queue to get the tasks. So those are able to handle, you know, several million a minute. So, you know, I haven't had a real need to look into something else, but it's definitely intriguing.
Yeah,
I'm in the same boat. I've never used SQS. But I could see if you're in a situation like where you're hosting on Heroku or something like that, and you just want a service out there to run this stuff instead of trying to find a service to run Redis for you and then set up the queue on that and things like that, it might be a little bit simpler.
I think that going from a self-hosted Sidekick server to something like an Amazon SQS is also a scalable approach, whereas you're going to end up paying for those Sidekick servers. Our company Scipio right now handles, we deliver, I think, 7 million text messages a day. We bring in probably near half that or more, all running through Sidekick. But we pay a fortune for that because that's what, you know what I mean? So you take that, but there's pros and cons. Like Sidekick offers, I love Sidekick. We use Sidekick Enterprise, and I highly recommend that for anybody using it on a enterprise level. However, if we were to go through SQS, it would probably save us a lot of money, but it doesn't offer the same type of tool sets and features that is offered with Sidekick. So like Sidekick gives you a lot of bells and whistles that SQS doesn't have. However, SQS, I think, is a more scalable solution unless you're willing to spend the money.
Yeah. And what specific bells and whistles do you like more as far as Sidekick goes?
So Sidekick, the stuff that we use is the unique checker, you know, making sure that we have unique items in the queue, the scheduling. There's just a lot of features that come with Sidekick Pro and Sidekick Enterprise. Mm-hmm. I don't remember them all offhand, but we use several of them. While we're talking, I'll look them up real quick.
Awesome.
One other thing that I would like to dive into here for a minute is just from the standpoint of people who are new. I think we're all fairly seasoned. I think we've all fought the battles with Sidekick and things like it, you know, used queuing where it's appropriate. But what if you're somebody who's new, who's kind of getting their feet wet, they've built an app, they might have some areas where the performance isn't quite where they want it, and they're thinking, oh, this sounds like something that might help me out, right? There may be some use cases. Where would you recommend they get started, and what are some of the use cases that they can use this in order to make their app perform better, or, you know, not tied down so much to those particular things that are, you know, that it's doing that you could farm out to a microservice?
Yeah, so I definitely suggest just getting started with the SQS, Amazon SQS documentation. They have a really great like getting started page, and you can really read through and get the gist of what's happening fairly quickly and come up to speed, you know, even as someone who is newer to this sort of architecture, just like, you know, I was, like I said before, we weren't using even like event-based anything really. So yeah, definitely really easy to get up and running. And I definitely want to tailor the demo and the things that I'm doing for Ruby Dev Summit to people who maybe haven't seen it before and that sort of thing, just an intro to it and how to get it up and running. Sorry, I forgot your second question. You had two.
Yeah, what like, are some of the basic use cases that people can just go, oh, I could definitely farm that out to a microservice? Because I think some people are hearing this and it's like, oh, okay, I get it. You know, I have some bit of work that could be done by a process that's not my main process. But a lot of times people don't think of, oh, you know, I could farm out. The one that I started with was email, but I know there are a zillion other ones that, you know, it's like, oh, this makes a lot of sense to just farm out to that kind of a microservice.
Yeah, I mean, really just drawing out kind of your data model and your, the different models that you have or tables that you have in your database and chunking that out and like, okay, what can I pull out of here, right? We've definitely done that exercise here, which was super helpful when we started to break apart our monolithic Rails app. And I feel like if you start doing that from the beginning and start thinking that way from day one, you know, breaking out a huge monolithic Rails app it will be less painful in the long run. And I'm sure you guys have a ton of experience doing that too.
Yeah, I've taken some larger Rails applications and kind of broken things out into like separate mountable engines and as well as maintaining big monolithic ones. But, you know, I think, you know, as far as the background processing goes, my take is always, you know, you have to kind of pick what's going to be best for that application. So in many cases, I will use, because, you know, I have my own pharma servers in the basement here. And plus we use, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's ridiculous. Like, it's nice in wintertime.
Nerd.
Kids go downstairs. It's time to huddle around the computers.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah, I worry about that server rack falling over on them. That'd be bad. But anyways, you know, so hard drive space and resources or server costs doesn't really matter to me from this standpoint because I can just spin up new services. So having a Sidekick service and stuff for my general go-to is my way to go. But I recently came across a few situations where I needed a background service to hold a queue, but data integrity and data persistency was a absolute must and critical. You know, it was more important than speed or anything else. So I was looking at using delayed job to do a RDS, you know, a database store for the queue, because I needed to make sure that no matter what happened, that data was being stored and it was going to be retrievable. But I think if you're using a platform as a service or something like Heroku or some of the many other alternatives, then I think that something like SQS, you know, could be a very viable solution.
I want to add in there real quick, the for those new people who are getting into this and who don't want to use SQS, and I don't want to lead people away from this, but if they do go Sidekick route, you're going to want to use a hosted Redis server. Likely. And there are some really good ones out there. Heroku has a lot of tie-ins, but Redis2Go is a very good one that I've been using. But that's Sidekick. You're still going to need that back-end server that's going to host your Redis unless you're hosting the Redis yourself.
This episode is sponsored by Hired.com. Are you searching for a new job? That can be stressful, scary, and time-consuming. Pushy recruiters try to sell you on roles you don't actually want, and the job boards make you feel like you're throwing your resume into a black hole, never to be seen again. And sometimes you go all the way through the interview process just to find out at the very end that the salary, offer, or company culture doesn't match what you're looking for. Hired is the world's most intelligent talent matching platform for full-time and contract opportunities in engineering, development, design, product management, data science, sales, and marketing. We make your job search faster, focused, and stress-free. Instead of endlessly applying to companies and hoping for the best, Hired puts you in control of when and how you connect with compelling new opportunities. After completing one simple application, top employers apply to hire you. And on Hired, you receive personal interview requests and upfront salary information so you can make informed decisions about what opportunities to pursue over a condensed timeline. Hired offers access to more than 4,000 innovative employers, including big brand names like Facebook and smaller emerging startups. The size and type of company you want to connect with is totally up to you. And we help you find new opportunities in 17 major cities in North America, Europe, Asia, and Australia. Open to relocation? Let them know. Your privacy and autonomy in your job search is of utmost importance. And if you sign up today using the show's link, that's hired.com/rubyrogues, you can get double the normal hiring bonus. That's $600 instead of $300. So go check them out at hired.com/rubyrogues.
And also make sure that you're not sharing it with your cache. That Redis, you should have on a non-volatile cache. So if the server ever reboots or if you restart the Redis server, you don't lose your queue. Whereas caching doesn't matter as much. You know, that'll get caught back up.
Yeah, and I'm also going to chime in and call out one of our sponsors since we're talking about this, Compose. Compose.com. They have Redis and RabbitMQ hosting. So you can check those out over there.
Very cool.
Awesome.
So
you've done...
Go ahead.
Sorry. I can talk all day long, and I think that these guys are questioning whether they should have brought me on or not. I see that you do a lot of mentoring. I'd love to hear about your mentoring and how you go about doing that. And first off, thanks for doing that. That's so cool that you do that.
Yeah, no, I love it. You know, a lot of times developers have side projects that they're working on, or, you know, doing some type of freelance work outside of their, you know, day coding job, I guess. And for me, I really enjoy mentoring because I don't feel like I'm doing the same thing. I'm still growing and learning technically, but I'm also getting to do like the people side of things and really feel like I make a difference in people who are learning how to write code. So yeah, I meet with students from all over the world. I've had students in Brazil and in Portugal, which has been super awesome and interesting to get to know those people and not only help them with technical issues, but also overcoming like imposter syndrome or confidence issues and like, you know, being a coach and someone who's encouraging you to keep going when you have, you know, you've spent all day looking at this problem and you can't figure out what's wrong. And then you notice that you're missing a semicolon or a comma or something like that.
I've never done that before, ever.
You know, it can be so frustrating. So yeah, I really enjoy working with these students, and I really like that the students I work with are not doing it full time. You know, it's a part-time code school, so they have full-time jobs and are doing it during their nights and stuff like that. So I've been able to work with a more diverse group of students than I have in the past. And I've really been enjoying that as well. Teaching people from all different backgrounds.
That's really cool. And I think that's very commendable, you know, because I think that, you know, there's different kind of support systems out there for many different walks of life. But I think that the imposter syndrome, you know, that kind of struck me because that's so important to have someone that you can go to just for a little bit of an uplifting almost, because, you know, I've been in many situations where I had a production app that there was something that was just inflating the memory or it was causing it to crash. And, you know, we're at the peak time of the day and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm just such a failure. Like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
You know, I have people coming at me saying, Dave, what are you doing? Like, what's up with your code? And it's just, you know, it can really like just really dig in and eat at you. So having that kind of support system, you know, to kind of just help people through things, you know, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, I think that's an important part of mentorship and, you know, soft skills and networking and interviewing skills. You know, a lot of times you just think, oh, I have a mentor. I have someone who, if I have a bug, can help me figure it out, or I can ask a technical question to. But I find that sometimes, you know, it's mostly technical, but there are definitely times where it's not technical at all, you know, like pep talks or working on soft skills and, you know, helping to mentor and build like a well-rounded developer, not just someone who can, you know, solve a problem and get something done, but be a great team member and a, you know, someone that people want to work with.
So how would people get involved with what you're doing? If they wanted a mentor, if they wanted to be involved in this?
Yeah. So, the company that I'm working with is called Block, and they're based out of San Francisco, and they're, you know, always hiring mentors. So you can interview with them, or you can, you know, get involved in your local community. I know we have a couple schools here in Denver that are always looking for mentors, or even just I have found people like going to meetups who are looking for a mentor. And so even if you go to local meetups, just volunteering your time there or volunteering for Rails Bridge, which I've talked about before on Ruby Rogues, but I'm really passionate. I love Rails Bridge and Bridge Foundry and what they're doing, because that's how I got introduced to programming. So, you know, I don't have a computer science degree, and I didn't go to code school even either. I learned through RailsBridge and having mentors that I met with outside of work. So for me, mentoring is super important and super important to give back to that. And yeah, any way you can volunteer your time to do that, I think is really worthwhile, because it really does make a difference and, you know, totally changed my life. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that I found that the ways that I've made a difference for people, the one-on-one ways are mm-hmm. often the most rewarding, because you get to see that person and you get to see what a difference it really made.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So Eric wanted to get us into hot water and ask a political
question. No idea. I'm sitting here, it's in my mind. I'm like, should I bring it up? Should I bring it? No, I'm not going to ask that at all. If you want me to, I can ask. But more so, let me ask you this, and not anything debatable or questionable. First off, I have two daughters. I love my daughters. I look at them every day and I just think, I can't believe how wonderful life is. I've never been more in love than I am with my daughters.
That's awesome.
I want them to have the same opportunities that I have. I want them to have the same respect that I have, the same salary. And I don't want to get too much into it. I do know that women in general in Utah get about 67% of the salary that men get. I don't want to get into any of that. No, that's a discussion for a different topic and perhaps a different podcast. I do want to know, what can you say to our female listeners and those who feel like it's a man's game to get in? Because I want to see this happen.
Yeah. So, advice for women who are wanting to get into the industry.
Right.
Yeah. I would say just to go for it and try to get as many people and resources on your side as possible. You know, there are so many great, developers out there who are willing to mentor and lend a helping hand. It's just all about having the confidence to find them and ask them, like, hey, you know, will you help me get into this and that sort of thing. And 9 times out of 10, that person will be more than willing. And yeah, just be willing to go into it and, be the only female on an all male engineering team, or, and, you know, maybe be ready to have someone make a comment about your gender. And, you know, I've definitely had that happen before, but I have, you know, it's been a while. So I definitely think that it's getting better. I definitely think that there are still a lot of diversity issues, and not only with gender, but socioeconomic background and race and all of those, of those things. And, you know, sexual orientation, everything. But I do think that it is getting better and women are more welcome in the community than they have been before. And it's so refreshing to see more women. You know, there are definitely times where I'm like, okay, I'm the only girl, but it's definitely getting better. And I think it's a great industry to get into. And I might not have said that as confidently as I am now a couple years ago, but I do mean that. And there are really great places to work where, you know, sexism or anything like that, racism, whatever, won't be an issue. And yeah, it's just hard because we are constantly seeing on the news or the bad, you know, anytime something bad happens or some sort of scandal, that's what's focused on in the news. Not, oh, like this company is awesome, like treating like this great story, you know, it's always, because that's what news is. And it's always negative and pointing fingers, you know, like with Uber, with Google, and the recent scandals that we've seen come out. And so I think it would be nice to see, to hear stories where it is good and it is a good environment where women and feel welcome. And I definitely feel like I have that story where I work currently, where that's not an issue and I am treated equally. I have an equal salary. I have all of those things and the support of my team member, and I don't ever think about my gender. So
I think that's awesome.
Good thing to know. Yeah.
And good job, Go Spot Check. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. One thing that you said, though, I think is very important. Well, there are a couple of things. I think one is just, yeah, I mean, you know, we hear a lot about some of the bad things that happen in the industry. And, you know, I think we need to keep in mind that each of those incidences is isolated. You know, that doesn't mean that there isn't a problem out there, but it also doesn't mean that, you know, it's necessarily happening every company, every place, every team. And so the other thing that I think is really important, and, you know, since we're talking about this and, you know, you mentioned Google, the one thing in that memo, I'm not going to go into all the stuff that was in it, but the one thing I thought was really important that was said in the memo was that we need to be open to talking about it. And so a lot of times you'll hear people yell and scream one way or the other about this kind of thing. And it doesn't help anything. If we can actually talk about and have conversations about where the problems are and where we're succeeding and where we're failing, that's where we start to solve the problems. And so it's encouraging to hear that things are working out for you and that there are places out there that are doing the right thing and treating people fairly. And it's also encouraging just to know that, you know what, there are conversations to be had, and we need to have that kind of open dialogue about this kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think open dialogue is a key. And, you know, there are definitely times where I've been like, ah, that kind of hurt my feelings, or maybe wasn't totally appropriate, but just having those conversations and not having it be a big deal, and just being open about it with my team members and just saying like, hey, this is where I'm coming from, and this made me feel this way, has been super beneficial and really been the key, I think, for the environment that I am currently working in. And not being afraid to say like, hey, that made me feel this way. Not like, oh, you're a sexist, but hey, like your comment made me feel this way.
Yep.
You know, I think I'm just super naive because I'm like, it's 2017. Like, are people still really sexist, racist and stuff? Like, I thought we kind of put all of that past us. You know, I mean, I would never look down on anyone based on their orientation, their gender, or the color of their skin, or how they talk or walk, you know, to think any less of them for being able to do the job. Like,
yeah, I think you'd be surprised.
I think you would too, actually.
I think I'm just naive. Like, I have my own little tiny bubble that apparently just needs to get popped.
Well, there's a lot of people out there who don't realize, because they grow up thinking a certain way. They grow up thinking that it's normal thinking a certain way. And so they don't even consider that what the actual way they're thinking might be wrong. And I think that's, and I know we're running out of time, but that's one of the things I'm thinking is like, maybe Kinsey, you've talked to people who say things that they don't even know what they're saying. They don't even realize what they're saying is rude or inconsiderate or sexist.
Exactly.
And that doesn't mean they're sexist. That doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just that they don't connect the two. You know what I mean? They haven't connected. What they just said is offensive. What the way they're thinking is offensive because that's all they know. And that's the part that's hard to change, because these people don't realize that they're that way. And they don't realize that they're hurting people.
But there's a difference between that. You know, I can understand that to a degree because I really don't have much of a filter on me. I say what's in my mind. And, you know, that does come back and bite me sometimes. But, you know, that's much different than saying, you know, if someone, this is not my opinion, but if someone says women are not as good as coders as men, therefore they should only get 60% of the salary. Who in the world would say that? Like, what in their mind, what has gone on in their mind to make them believe that that's actually legit, you know?
Right.
I'm so confused by that.
Well, and I think when we get into this, what you're saying, what both of you are saying, just,
sorry, Chuck.
No,
I have a point. This is my last rogue.
I'm trying to get to the core of this, but it's a complicated thing, right? Because nobody's coming out and saying, well, I'm going to pay them less because they're a minority. Or at least, I can't say no one, but, you know, I think that's pretty uncommon. You know, so you get kind of into this gray area, you know, where what is right and what is wrong, and, you know, what is fair compensation for somebody and what should be taken into account. And I think we all agree that gender and race and things like that shouldn't come into account. But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, let's assume that most people are well-intentioned. So then there's all of the other stuff, and that's where it gets messy. And so, you know, yeah, I'm totally with you on this stuff, Dave, where it's like, you know, yeah, I don't see anybody saying, you know, well, you know, she's a woman, so we can pay her less, or, you know,
right.
I'm not going to hire that guy because he's a different race than me.
Yeah, a lot of times it's unconscious.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, there are other things going on and, you know, it may look that way, but it's not that way. And, you know, the other thing is that I don't think we really have terrific data on a lot of this stuff. I mean, we hear these numbers thrown around, but I don't think anybody who has come out with any of these numbers on the wage gap or anything else has really actually dug into the numbers and said, hey, look, this is this. And most of the sources that I actually see come out with a number, you know, that some kind of think tank or something, they usually have an agenda. And so it gets muddy that way, too. And it's like, OK, so what's the actual truth? Like, where is, you know, where is the actual fact here? And it gets really tricky, really quick to mm-hmm. figure out what, you know, what's actually going on.
Yeah. And it's hard. And I think even just the fact that we're talking about this on such a popular, you know, technical podcast is a great thing too. Yeah. Like you guys mm-hmm. said, just having these conversations and.
Yeah. I just want to encourage people, you know, if you're wondering, talk to some people who have an opinion one way or the other. Find out what that's based on, and then go do some homework. And I think we'll have a lot better conversations about this kind of thing because people will actually be informed on,
right?
Hey, you know, this is where the numbers came from. Here are the indications that we got. Here are the actual, you know, here are the actual facts around it. And this is what we can prove. This is what we can't prove. But this is kind of what's indicated by the data we can find.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go ahead and do some picks.
Do you ever have issues crop up in production that you don't see in development? Do you even know how your app is performing in production? Performance, errors, and analytics to figure out where your app is bogging down are important to keep an eye on. You could try one of those error tracking apps, but why not use a tool that does it all? Try Datadog. Datadog tracks performance, collects data on your errors, and provides you with the information you need to improve your user's experience and fix bugs without having to log into the production server and dig through the logs. What if my app spans across multiple servers and services, you ask? Datadog seamlessly collects metrics from every corner of your application, including services like Amazon AWS and systems like Redis. So whether you want a clear view into your application's performance, need to be notified of new errors, or to keep track of your application across various services you use, use Datadog. If you go to devchat.tv/datadog and start a free trial, they'll send you a free Datadog t-shirt.
Eric, do you have some picks for us?
Yeah, actually, it's a very appropriate pick, I think. A couple of things. One of them is Open Collective. Now, Open Collective is an organization that supports open source code. They provide a way for larger projects to be able to essentially create a little micro company around it, where Open Collective will take the funds and will distribute them according to basically like a business. So they've had amazing stories where they supported Webpack, and Webpack is now bringing in over $100,000 a year because of donations, and it really supports the growth of it. They're a wonderful organization. Now, I want to point out one of the organizations that are working with them is Women Who Code. Women Who Code, their mission is to inspire women to excel in tech careers, and I think it's a wonderful organization. You can donate to it at opencollective.com/WWCode.
Awesome.
That's it.
Dave, what are your picks?
Just one pick. And again, it's not technology centric and it's not power tool centric either. So, you know, here's a plus one. It's health insurance. You know, my daughter last week on Wednesday, she fell and broke her arm. And it scared me because our family had never broken any bones. So she's 4 years old. She doesn't understand what's happening. But we were able to go and get her the health care she needed. And we didn't have to stress and worry about the money because we have good health insurance. So, you know, there's been many years where I did not have health insurance, and it was almost nerve-wracking of getting hurt or getting sick. And it's just, you know, just a stress relief to have.
Awesome.
You're saying it's awesome? She fell and broke her arm?
No, I'm just kidding.
So.
Oh, wow.
Totally kidding.
Oh, wow. Man, yesterday was a rough day for me, and I didn't have any time to prepare any picks. So, yeah, I guess I can come up with something really quickly. So I've been listening to a few books that have kind of changed the way that I look at a few things. And so I'm just going to go ahead and pick those. The first one is called Profit First. If you're running a business, it's a way of managing your finances in your business and personal life make sure that you are getting out of it what you need and that you are running a profitable business. The other book is Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, and I might have picked this last week. I don't remember. But it's another book that just kind of changed the way that I think about a lot of things. And so anyway, I'm rereading it and just getting a ton out of it. So I'll pick those. Kinsey, what are your picks?
Yeah. So if you are going to RubyConf and you are RubyConf, you know, is the biggest, I'm sure everyone knows who's listening, the biggest Ruby conference. It's going to be in New Orleans this year. And if you are interested in mentoring, we are accepting applications for the guide program. So every year we have, around 25 scholars that get picked to go to the conference and be paired with a mentor and, you know, have that support system. Because imagine going to this big conference, not knowing anyone, being new to programming and how overwhelming that can be. So we are looking for awesome guides to act as a mentor during the conference. So if you want to go to the RubyConf website and apply, that would be awesome.
Can I chime in on that real quick? I did it few years ago. I was a guide at RubyConf and it was awesome. You get to hang out with the other guides, but you also get to help out a bunch of people who are new to the industry. And, you know, I mean, a lot of the things you take for granted is just like, hey, look here, you know, let me help you figure out which sessions you need to be in, but also just introducing them to people and helping them find the folks that can, you know, lead them a little further down the road. Anyway, it was a very rewarding experience for me.
Awesome. And I would say another pick is, I don't know if anyone has read the book Release It, but I have just started reading it and I am really enjoying it and learning a lot from that book. I can't remember the author off the top of my head, but definitely recommend reading that. I think that's all too.
All right. Well, if people want to see what you're working on these days or follow you on Twitter or GitHub, what do they do?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Kinsey Ann Durham. Also, if you are interested in fly fishing at all, you can follow my Instagram, which is also Kinsey Ann Durham, but it's mostly about fishing, so not really about programming. I really enjoy doing that and taking a break from the computer. I think that's an important thing. And yeah, you can also find me on GitHub as Durham KA or shoot me an email.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up. Thank you for coming, Kinsey.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Really great conversations and super interesting to learn what you guys are doing, with Sidekick and different applications for SQS. So,
yep. And we'll encourage people to go get a ticket to Ruby Dev Summit at rubydevsummit.com. It's free. You can come see your talk for free. And so, yeah, just go get a ticket and then you can come watch it live.
Awesome.
All right.
We'll thank you.
Next week.
Thanks, Kinsey.
Talk to y'all later.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.